Good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. As we mentioned, my first guest is Chris Robinson with the Summit County Council. I have Chris on the line. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Carolyn.
Thank you for joining us. So talk to us a little bit. Let's start off talking about the Public Lands Initiative. What do we stand to lose, I guess, is the question, if nothing is done?
Oh, I don't think we stand to lose a great deal. It's not a crisis. I think we in this county believe in land protection and in conservation for the most part. And what we would do in our public lands bill would be to beef up those protections, but it's not a clear and present danger right now. These lands are in the high Uintas and quite remote. I think that we need to choose our timing well when we have a sponsor that's eager and when we have the bandwidth to make it happen.
Are most of the lands that we're talking about right now considered primitive areas?
Oh, there's some of that. I don't know the offhand how to completely answer that, but some of them are roadless areas, so I guess they're primitive, and that would be an expansion of the High Uintas Wilderness. And it's not a huge footprint. I mean, it's all relative, I suppose, but I think we're dealing with like maybe 50 or 60,000 acres compared to Emory County that dealt with 1 million acres or something. You know, ours is fairly small. It's kind of some cleanup around the Wilderness Act that happened 30 years ago or 40 years ago. Whenever it was, I think it was 1984. But they're kind of adjustments and other things that weren't thought about then.
Okay. And the governor, though, is set to sign a roadless rural policy. Is that correct? And would that allow for roads to be developed in areas where there currently aren't roads?
Well, the USDA Forest Service promulgated the 2001 roadless rule, which prohibited road building in national forest lands that are in many states. And what the state of Utah has recently done is it polled its 29 counties and asked for recommendations to get a special roadless rule for Utah and an amendment to the overarching national one. And Summit County went through and categorized the various, you know, the forests were broken down in our county and in other counties into polygons, into, you know, discrete areas that were then assigned a number and a category, and we went through and as requested, provided our recommendations. And then what the governor did through its Public Lands Policy Coordinating Committee, or PLIPCO, or Coordinating Office, it sent in this petition to the Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, and the Chief Forester. And what they did in this state petition is they were four categories. They combined the first three into one category, and that has caused us concern because the first category was to leave certain lands alone and leave the current roadless rule in force. And the second category allowed for more access, mainly for managing forests. And the third category, even more access. And what we got was a blend of all three that kind of watered down the protections that would have been in the first category. But that's what has happened. There's been this petition that's sitting on someone's desk in Washington, D.C., seeking approval, and I have no idea whether it has any chance of getting approved, but we're going to send a letter to the state of Utah asking them what happened to the three categories, how we went from having three down to this kind of a amalgamated one category that doesn't work for us in some instances or that we don't like.
Okay. Staying on the land topic, the Central Wasatch Commission, the council's considering, still debating, I guess, whether to continue financial contribution to the organization. And as the representative, Chris, on the county, on the commission, what are your feelings on it? And what do you think Summit County would be able to get out of staying involved in this commission?
Well, I think in the long run, this model of being assessing the members isn't a fair one because, the makeup of the commission it's elected officials from various jurisdictions, but there are a lot of other beneficiaries that are not members and therefore not assessed, and it's difficult to financially allocate the value. You know, it's hard to argue that we're not peripheral to it, where most of the Central Wasatch is in Salt Lake County. You know, we have literally just like 1,000 acres, if you want to go, of the actual footprint of the Central Wasatch, you know, not of the public lands within the Central Wasatch. But in a bigger way, the Central Wasatch is, you know, we're the backside of it. And, you know, the Deer Valley and Park City Mountain Resort, that mountain range, we're the, you know, the Big Cottonwood Canyon's on the other side of the ridge. So we're talking about the management of the federal lands on the other side of the hill. And I think that's important for us to have a say in how it's done and to be involved at the top, I guess, at the most important level. The question is, how much is that financially worth? And it's hard to put a high dollar value to it. And it'll be interesting to see how Park City wrestles with this. I think they either met yesterday or are meeting today on the same topic. They have had their financial contribution has been exactly double what ours has, where we've contributed $50,000 a year for the last 3 years. They've contributed $100,000.
What does the money go towards?
Well, it initially went to finance the operations of the Mountain Accord, and then when the Central Wasatch took over, those monies were assigned it to basically provide working capital to run the, you know, we have three employees, and it's their salaries and benefits are occupancy for our offices and some small projects. I mean, it has a total budget of around $700,000-$800,000, and there are all the members like Mill Creek or Sandy City or Salt Lake County, Salt Lake City, Town of Alta. They all, you know, have more of a direct connection, and also have been pretty large contributors. But it goes to operate the commission.
It needs a
long-term source. I don't think that model is not a viable one. I think those entities will tire of funding it that way, just as we are, and they have, of course, a lot greater connection to it.
Right, right. But there is, of course, that phantom discussion that keeps coming up regarding, you know, access tunnels from the Cottonwoods over to Park City connection somehow with the backside. And I guess the question is $50,000 worth having a seat at that table in order to have some influence or, you know, some control over what might happen in the future?
I don't, you know, the tunnel discussion that most recently brought up at our last county council discussion on this was kind of blindsided me, because in my attendance at the CWC meetings, that hasn't been even talked about once. But what happens is you have Alta Ski Lifts company that wants to grow their business, and they want to connect with Big Cottonwood Canyon, and they, you know, the other three resorts are pretty much on board with accepting this, the federal legislation, and supporting it that would let them trade lands, but then would hem them in, would prevent ski resort expansion. In other words, their boundaries would be once and for all set, unless Congress decided to amend it, which, you know, the so-called "it takes an act of Congress" challenge, that would be what the challenge would be. But Alta is the one that keeps saying, well, you know, we ought to connect into Big Cottonwood Canyon, and while we're at it, maybe we ought to connect to Park City. But that's just one resort's, I'm going to call it, idle chatter at this point. So do we need to spend $50,000 a year over that potentiality? No, that's not the reason to be involved, but over a threat of a tunnel. But there are groups, including Ski Utah, that, and including members of my council, that thinking over the snow connection might be a good idea. And that gets talked about. And then there are, you know, the 2030 Winter Olympic Games are, while, you know, 11 years away and uncertain as to whether we're really going to get them, but there would be, you know, a lot of attention brought to the venue resorts and transportation and other improvements that, you know, it may be beneficial to have, you know, the Central Wasatch Commission may be involved in those discussions quite a bit. So I don't think anybody doesn't think Summit County should be on the commission. We just don't want to pay much for it.
Sure.
That's the question. I don't think people are saying, Chris, you ought to get off this commission. We want to pull out. We don't want a Wasatch Back representative. It's that we don't want to pay $50,000 for that. We don't think that's the value.
Sure.
And finding where that value is what we're wrestling with.
Okay. Do you have a time? Do you have a time frame where that decision has to be made?
Well, unlike the cities that are members of the commission that have a fiscal year ending June 30th, we're on a calendar year, and our budget has been set for 2019. So we'd be talking about our contribution coming up here in our budget cycle that starts in September.
Okay.
I mean, if we could, I suppose, do a budget amendment, but the commission knows that the Salt Lake County and Salt Lake and Summit County have a different fiscal year, and that it's hard for us to make adjustments without being in the budget process.
Okay. Let's move on quickly and talk about the roundabout, the Jeremy Project roads. It's apparently the plan is to start June 10th. That was the presentation given last night. And just want to kind of get an update of how much of a hassle this is going to be for neighborhood traffic. Will there be activity going on at night to sort of hurry through the construction? What's the overall plan there?
Well, it's already a congested area with no construction. So it's going to be a hassle, and it may be the cost of doing business for a brighter future. We have a very robust public outreach program, and the contractor, you know, in the contract there are provisions of certain things they must do, and keeping lanes open, and doing the keeping partial access. So I think we're doing the best to alert the public and to be in a position to adapt and to minimize the impact. But there will be impact. I mean, we did some utility work, but maybe the water and the power and gas companies did last year, just replacing some pipelines and conduits under the interchange, and it was disruptive then. So it's not going to be pretty, but there's no good time to do it, and I think when it's done, it will be a great improvement.
Okay. We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much for giving us this update. I appreciate the call in.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Take care. Bye now. As we've reported, KPCW is challenging the sealing of the court case involving the Extel Development Company against a former employee, Van Hamayer, and his partner and Park City resident, Diana Swanner. Extel is the owner of some 2,300 acres of land in Wasatch County on which Mayflower Mountain Resort is being developed. KPCW has filed a motion asking 4th District Court Judge Jennifer Brown to reconsider her order that sealed this lawsuit from public scrutiny. Extel requested an extension of time to answer KPCW's motion. In return for a 3-week extension, Extel's attorney John Lund offered KPCW an interview with the founder and chairman of Extel Development Company, Gary Barnett. That interview with KPCW News Director Leslie Thatcher took place last Thursday, May 23rd. At that time, Mr. Barnett requested that the interview not be broadcast until today. So here you have this interview.
In November 2017, the Extel Development Company, owned solely by Gary Barnett, purchased some 2,300 acres of land known as Mayflower. It's the property that rises up west of the Jordan L Reservoir to the southern boundary of Deer Valley Resort. The property is located within Wasatch County, but all of the land use decisions are now being made by an appointed board of directors known as MIDA. This is the Military Installation Development Authority. On the phone is Gary Barnett as part of an agreement that I made to give his attorneys more time to file a motion in opposition of my motion to unseal the lawsuit that Mr. Barnett had filed last October against a former employee, Van Hamayer, and his partner, Diana Swanner. Mr. Barnett agreed to record this interview, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
If you would, just begin by telling us who you are. Word on the street is that you're New York City's biggest developer, even bigger than Donald Trump.
I think part of that might be true, but I'm certainly not New York City's biggest developer. I think there are bigger developers than we are. But we're one of the significant developers in New York City. And Donald Trump has not been developing in New York City for quite some years. He's got better things to do right now.
So why are you here in Park City? I mean, it seems your preference is for large metropolitan areas, not former sheep grazing and mining lands.
That's a good question. So it goes back quite some years. I think now it's between 15 and 20 years ago. I was brought to Park City to invest in a piece of land that's now known as Too High, which has been developed now by Jack Bistritz's company. So we were partners in that deal and in another deal in Kansas City. I was brought there by somebody I knew, and we went down the road in terms of acquisition and land development. And then after a couple of years, we separated, we parted ways, and he kept the Park City assets, I got Kansas City asset, and whatever, we split ways. And so that was my first exposure and interest in Utah and in Park City. And then sometime later, I guess a few years ago, I was approached by somebody who had worked for me in the past and said, well, there's this piece of land that's potentially interesting to buy, and went into it. It was called Blue Ledge. I think this goes back about 4 years now. Well, it probably goes back even more, maybe 5 or 6 years. But eventually, after some period of time, I went ahead and bought that piece of property. It was interesting. It was a small piece of property, 40 acres, but I was told I was in the MIDA district, which meant that there was more flexibility but also more speed, less red tape in terms of potentially developing it. I was also shown a very pretty design to what could be built there eventually. That wasn't quite accurate, but in any event, I went in there, I bought the property, we paid all cash, and that was the start of what developed into, you know, significant land acquisition in that area.
All right, I'm going to get back to the relationship with Jack Bristesser, but let's talk about just the draw here in Utah. I mean, we got certainly low property taxes, but what else?
Look, I mean, Utah is a beautiful state, a beautiful land. It's on the Deer Valley Mountain. So, I mean, it's beautiful there. And generally speaking, people, you know, are trying to help. They're not, you know, I'm based in New York City, and, you know, there's like an anti-development attitude there sometimes from some areas, and it's gotten a little bit worse there. And in Utah, that's just not the way it is. There's a lot more common sense. There's a recognition that, you know, development is good if it's well thought out and that it does provide jobs. So it's a better environment to work in. And as I say, the fact that there was the MIDA jurisdiction, you know, kind of had provided us with more certainty and more confidence that we would actually be able to get a well-thought-out project approved, and that's in fact turned out to be the case.
And I'm going to get back to that whole MIDA agreement, but we've heard that Mayflower Mountain is to become another portal into the Deer Valley Resort. Is that still the plan?
It's very possible. We're in ongoing discussions, but we've been talking to them for several years, actually, almost since we bought our land, and then of course they. The owners of Deer Valley sold it to a new group. It's possible, but there's nothing conclusive at this point.
Well, your property, I mean, we're talking about a lot lower elevation skiing that's going to need a lot of snowmaking, a lot of grooming. Do you have what it takes to be your own ski resort without Deer Valley?
Again, this is all stuff that's a little bit early for us to discuss. We're doing work on several different possibilities, and so we, you know, just not ready to say what the future is going to be there.
Yeah, I think Wasatch County Council though was interested in this, knowing that it was a partnership with Deer Valley. So the fact that there may not be an operating or development agreement with Deer Valley, does that kind of negate what Wasatch County had given you in terms of development approvals?
I don't think so. And I don't know that we've gotten Wasatch County development approvals, actually. As I say, I think it's in the MIDA jurisdiction. I mean, we did get some approvals from them, and they actually approved us going into MIDA. So I think they've been working well with us as well. We have, you know, no complaints at this point. I think everybody's so far happy with what we're envisioning up and down the line. It's a respectful plan. It doesn't put tremendous density on the property. And as to, you know, the skiing possibilities, we definitely have the right to connect to Deer Valley with the ski lift. And whether that gets, you know, more extended and more extensive, we're not sure yet. So, but I mean, you know, our plans will get firmed up in the next few months, and we'll have a better idea then. And who knows? Maybe you'll give me another interview.
Yeah. So you have your final approvals. You could start building any time at this point.
I think that's true, or near true. I think we could, and we are hopefully going to begin construction in the next few months on the first of the vertical structures. We've been started a little bit on infrastructure, but we will be continuing on infrastructure, and we're hopeful that in the next few months we'll be able to start excavation foundation on kind of the first part of the project and our commitment to MITA, which is to begin work on what's going to be a really nice conference hotel that will enable the military to benefit and also, of course, to have conferences and to provide something in the community that really isn't there right now.
Yeah, and that's what's just so interesting is how is it that what started out to be about 100 hotel rooms in a four-star hotel that would be used for our servicemen and women at reduced rates has now exploded into basically MITA plan. I mean, we've got not only this 100 rooms in one hotel, but we have this entire 2,300 acres now part of MITA Town with plans to annex even portions of the Hideout development, perhaps even the Sky Ridge development.
Which development? Well, I don't know about those two developments. No, nobody's told me about that. That's not contiguous to us, is it?
Well, I think Hideout, I've heard Hideout is, yes.
Hideout?
Mm-hmm.
Hideout? I mean, I don't know anything about that. I know that our contiguous land that we control and that we own is in MITA, but that basically centers around what I'm talking about. But I would say that, it sounds easy. You know, just go ahead and put up a hotel, and it's going to support the military. But the reality is that to do a new project and to get the land and to have the infrastructure and to have a large enough hotel that will be able to survive, right? Because it's not going to just survive as a 100-key, subsidized hotel. So to do all that, that takes a lot of money and a lot of planning, and to do something right, is not so easy. And they were trying to do this for years and years before we came around. Nothing got done. And God willing, now we're going to actually get something done with a plan that I think is overall been very well received by the community. As I say, it's not high density. It's a very nice village that we can, really add. We haven't seen any real pushback to this, and I think it's going to turn out very, very nice. I think everybody's going to be proud of it.
Well, Senate Bill 269 was approved this past legislative session here in Utah, and it was my understanding that you had hired a lobbyist to see this legislation through, and this basically then just gave MITA this more authority than beyond this 100 rooms or that 40 acres of Blue Ledge. I guess, why is this a good thing for residents to have an appointed out-of-town board making our community's land decisions?
I think it's, I don't have to speak for MITA. You should interview them, directly. I don't know that MITA is out of town. I think it's certainly a Utah-based entity and has done some successful things elsewhere around Hill Air Force Base. But just to go into that, I think the proof is in the pudding, so to speak. And this is not, an add-on or an imposition on some community where people are up in arms about this. I think this is something where we've taken an unused portion of the mountain that Deer Valley is on and which has very good accessibility directly to the highways, and we are trying to develop that into what could be a very nice and high-performing village, hotels, great, accessibility to the Deer Valley Mountain, which will enhance all of the economy in the area and on the mountain. I'm not sure, that there's any real downside to this. As I say, it's not super high dense, and it has very good accessibility. So, why not look at it first and kind of then make judgments instead of saying, well, this is some other entity that's involved. And keep in mind that this is a substantial undertaking. It needs certainty. It needs speed. And sometimes the existing system can't really deal with something like this. It takes a lot of people. It takes a lot of time, and the local authorities have got a ton of stuff on their plate already. And on the other hand, we're looking at making major commitments. You know, this is going to be multi-hundreds of millions of dollars expended in, you know, just the first hotel is going to be very significant. So we need to know, you know, with certainty that we're going to kind of get something done. We're going to be able to get the rest of the community done, because it's all about a critical mass here. You can't build a village if you don't know you're going to be able to build the end of the village. I mean, the resorts towns of the West are littered with developments and projects that started out very nicely and then hit a downturn and then never got finished, or got finished over 10 or 20 or 30 years later. So, you know, it's so important to get something that's successful that everybody will enjoy and will make an addition to the community. So it's very important to have this kind of clarity, speed, and certainty. And I think that's one of the major things that the MIDA authority brings, to the ability to move things along quickly.
But what I hear you saying is that we, the community, have to give up our representative, our representation, having it go through the Wasatch County Planning Office, the Wasatch County Council, so that you can get it through MIDA sooner than you would having to wait your turn going through the Wasatch County offices.
No, I don't think that that's the entire story. I think we did go through Wasatch County. I think if you look at it, we did go through it. They basically approved our model and our master plan. We've had consultations with the planning authority, with the council. The council voted, I think, unanimously to send us to MIDA, because they were satisfied with our plans. They did look at our plans. They did like what we're doing, and we are going to be working on a joint basis, an interactive basis with the county also. I don't think you should be portraying it as somehow this is a negative or against what the local community and local council want. They saw everything that we're doing. They approved it. I don't know whether they formally approved it, but they certainly approved it. They like what we're doing, and they're the ones who agreed to send this over to MIDA, because they appreciated the fact that it was a huge burden to take care of this, and that we would be able to get more certainty out of it.
Okay. It was not my understanding that Wasatch County sent you over to MIDA, so that spins a new light on this.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You had mentioned Jack Bistercer. My understanding is that you guys are longtime friends, actually. Can you tell me about your relationship? I mean, you said that you had some business dealings here with Toohey, and I mean, do you have a financial relationship with them, and did you ever loan him any money?
No. Actually, when we went into the deal, he put in most of the money in the couple of deals that we were in. It wasn't a large amount at that time, and we were friends going back I don't know, maybe 40 years now, in school, and you know, we went down the road. We were in this together for a couple of years and then parted ways.
So I've heard that there are plans in the works to try and link Mayflower Mountain to Park City Mountain Resort. Of course, Mr. Bistercer still owns the property there, that he purchased from United Park City Mines. It basically stretches from the canyons to Deer Valley. I mean, is that a plan to try and connect it to Park City somehow?
I don't know. I mean, Park City, I think Jack owns the land under the Canyons Resort, maybe, and leases it to Altera. I'm not sure what the arrangement is. Not to Altera, sorry, to Vail Resorts.
Correct.
I don't think he controls, you know, what goes on in terms of linking or not linking. But I really don't know. I'm not familiar with, you know, with other parties' plans.
Okay, so no negotiations taking place then to become maybe part of Vail Resorts as opposed to Deer Valley Resort.
I'm not going to comment on those kind of questions.
Because
I'm not. It's a speculative, private question. I'm not answering on that.
All right. Well, tell me what you can about the lawsuit then that you filed against Van Haymeyer and Diana Swanner. As you mentioned, Mr. Haymeyer, of course, served as your vice president of development for a year or so ago.
More than a year. It was several years, actually. So when we purchased the property, he signed on. He had he made a very nice profit on the property, then stayed in for a profits interest, besides that, and then also went to work for Extel as a vice president and worked for Extel for several years. The problem is he forgot that he was a vice president working for Extel and then tried to expropriate some property that we were trying to buy for himself in order to hold us up for more compensation, shall we say.
So why did you need the case sealed?
Well, we have a number. We have, you know, various aspects of our business plan and you know, internal business affairs that could damage us if it was revealed prematurely. So that's why we did not want it to be disclosed.
So this is a civil lawsuit, I guess he didn't do anything criminally wrong. It's just something that you think that he did morally or ethically wrong?
Legally wrong, morally wrong, ethically wrong, every which way that anyone can think of it, it was wrong. You don't work for somebody, take their salaries year after year, and then, you know, see an opportunity to expropriate something for yourself and do that. You owe us the obligation. You're working for us. You were working in our direction. It was something that we were trying to buy, and you don't then turn around and try and expropriate that for yourself. I don't think anybody, let's say it another way, 99 out of 100 people who look at this would say it's unbelievable. Not just wrong, it's unbelievable. But everybody's entitled to their opinion. I think it's very, very disappointing. I was really surprised, and I've been in business a long time. But it is what it is, and so we certainly are hopeful that everything will get taken care of in the courts.
All right. So, I mean, do you see it going through, or do you think that this is going to be settled here?
No idea. I can't see any reason. You know, I mean, we're going down the road. We've done the depositions, and who knows? You know, with settlements, you never know till they're done. But we don't have any discussions going on.
Yeah. Do you plan to unseal this, or you're going to fight this to the end?
I actually don't know. You know, I have to kind of revisit it. This phone conversation, this interview is actually just kind of, I'm giving you kind of the background as to what's going on. And I would have to update and look at it and see when whatever is disclosed in the lawsuit and depositions, when that might not be so time sensitive anymore. So with the passage of time, it will eventually be something that could be unsealed as a matter of damage to us. So right now it would be damaging to our business plan, but down the road, you know, it might not matter, and then we would consider unsealing it.
All right. Well, as you know, I mean, it's me against your.
And we'll give it to you. And we'll give it to you first. How's that?
Well, I guess just my argument, and I just want people to know that is that this is the biggest development in Wasatch County's history, and it just seems that it's something that the public has a right to know.
Well, I actually disagree with you because it's not development related. This is an employment issue. This is a violation of trust and an expropriation, attempted expropriation of property, and that has nothing to do with the development. It's a personal matter, and I see no reason why that's something that's in the public interest to know. It's not about the development. If it was, maybe you'd have a point, but it isn't.
All right. Well, you've spent much more time than you had agreed to. I appreciate that.
Right.
Anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
Just that we hope to, you know, be successful here in the state of Utah and in Wasatch County and Deer Valley and Park City. And we think we have really beautiful plans. And God willing, we'll be able to add something that really adds to the whole skiing experience, the whole mountain resort experience in Park City, and will be a great addition to the community.
All right. Gary Barnett, again, the founder and chairman of the Extel Development Company. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Nice to talk to you.
Good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. Our final guests this morning are a group of local women-owned business owners who are here to talk about a campaign, a collaborative campaign called the hashtag PC Initiative, hashtag Women Owned. And with us this morning, we have Maren Mullen from the Gallery Mar. Welcome, Maren.
Thank you.
And we have Blair Islieb from Flight, which is a boutique on Main Street.
Hi.
And then Kai, and then Ashley Williams with Mary Jane's. Good morning, Ashley.
Good morning.
Thank you, ladies, for joining us this morning. So let's, Blair, let's start with you. Talk to us a little bit about what hashtag the PC Initiative.
So it's actually
PC Native.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
Yep.
Pardon me.
PC
Sorry.
Native. You know, we just kind of, as a group of women that own businesses on Main Street and in the surrounding Park City area, wanted to do something to create a little more awareness that there are businesses here that are, you know, locally owned. They were born here in Park City, and that we're still here. There's a bit of, you know, bigger corporations moving in, and we're still here. So we just wanted to remind the public and our visitors that we're locally owned and women owned too.
And so hashtag PC Native, is that a marketing tag of
yes.
some kind or another that you plan to use with, you know, your
yeah.
tweets and your social media work? And
Correct. Yeah. It's one way for all of us to put it on all of our social channels, our marketing channels to, you know, show that we're our own little tribe as well. We're all supporting each other. So it makes it cohesive for all of us.
Okay. And Ashley Williams with Mary Jane's. So what does it mean to your business, and how will it affect you ultimately, do you think, a PC Native?
Well, I believe we think that it's important not only to support our local businesses, but to bring our community together in different ways and allow various and fun different activities, going from shopping the stores and strolling through the galleries, but having things like the escape room. And I think it makes our town super unique. And it's just super awesome to have a team be brought together through something as simple as hashtag PC Native. So.
And will there be some sort of designation on your storefront? Why don't you talk about that, Maren Mullen from Gallery Mar?
Sure. So Blair organized us all and started this off. And we've got a group of, gosh, I think maybe 20 different female-owned mm-hmm. businesses. And one thing that's uniting us is, of course, the hashtag. But we all have these fabulous new window clings now that say hashtag PC Local. And so you can walk up to a door and you'll know exactly if it's one of these women-owned, locally started, hiring local people, you know, paying for all of our kids to go to daycare mm-hmm. and school here in Park City, community-focused businesses.
Okay, so yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, because it is more expensive to do business here on Main Street, especially. But are there some specific designations that you offer as far as, you know, benefits or a higher wage or
no? It's some just a great group of Park City women coming together to help support each other.
Okay. And has this type of a project been done in other places?
I don't know, Blair.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's not based off of anyone else, but, you know, I can't see it being not something that lots of small towns would want to, you know, create awareness around.
What would be the requirements to be a participant?
You know, honestly, right now who we have in here, it's all Park City started or at maybe one or two have their second location here, and women owned. So that's the main one that we've focused on.
Okay. So female owned
mm-hmm.
and having started the business here in town.
And
is it
know,
specifically in Park City 84060, or does it expand
no,
to?
No, so out at the junction, we've got Jolie, Wish,
Splendor,
Baby Nini, that's not on the street. So,
and this isn't a closed group.
We're totally open.
Yeah, all about supporting other women and pulling us together so that we can all be stronger together.
So with the growth that's happening in, you know, places like Heber and Midway, Wasatch County. Has that been part of the discussion also? There are some locally owned business owners over there, female business owners. Yeah. Has
That's
there been
a great,
any effort
no,
in that?
I mean, we just haven't Not thought yet. Of that, but thank you, Carolyn,
okay,
for
get
telling
to work.
Us. Yeah, totally, welcome.
So tell us some more, Blair, about just the overall strategy of this and how you plan to go forward and let the community, let the world that comes to visit Park City know about mm-hmm. this project and, you know, what you think it will do ultimately.
Sure. You know, well, we're kind of at an organic starting point right now, so we'll see where it goes. But right now it's, you know, it's about welcoming others that we've missed into the group. And already we've had a lot of different ideas just in our, you know, in our emails back and forth and the times we get together. So we'll see. Mm-hmm. I guess is the
okay.
answer.
To be determined. Well, maybe
TBD.
We'll have you come back after the summer season and see just how things are.
Yeah, we'd be
happy
to.
How they play out. Well, thanks. We're going to have to leave it there. Appreciate all of you coming in this morning to talk about the PC, hashtag PC Native project.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.